Hello, you're listening to People, Pets, and Vets with Dr. Brad Miller and registered veterinary technician Angel Martin.
Hello.
Each week, we bring you current events and news in the veterinary industry and share our thoughts and perspective on how they impact us and our animal hospital. We also try to give you an insight and behind-the-scenes glance at our clinic and the people in it. This episode 86, a special post-Thanksgiving episode, is once again being brought to you by Georgia Veterinary Associates, a family of animal hospitals caring for your family pet. So, we are broadcasting from rainy, dreary,
depressing
Lawrenceville, Georgia.
Feels like you're in a
today.
Turkey coma, yeah. Outside.
I mean, it's in the 50s, it's rainy, it's just overcast all day, no snow predicted anytime soon, but I think...
Are you sure about that? I thought I saw snow predictions.
I looked this morning and did not see that.
Maybe it was just threats of it. Because there is a cold front coming through, like, the Midwest.
Yeah, cold front, I think, towards the end of the week across the country, but I think our beautiful, lovely, warm weather is gone until next spring.
I don't know. I mean, quite frankly, it was 71, 72 on Thanksgiving. It was a little hot.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of ready finally for some cooler weather. I don't necessarily want the ice and the sleet rain mixture that happens here in Georgia.
Right.
One day of snow would be fantastic, but we won't get picky. Well, 2020, you never know what's going to happen.
Quick story, healthy pet, happy life. I oftentimes will use the analogy of why your pet needs to be on year-round monthly heartworm prevention. And literally, I will say, have you ever been outside deep frying your turkey on Thanksgiving Day and you swat a mosquito?
Yeah.
And most people are going to agree. And so for those of you who don't know, mosquitoes transmit heartworm. So another interesting story, heartworm or heartworm disease. I used to always call it heartworm disease, but probably what, 5-8 years ago,
mm-hmm.
quote unquote, they started just calling it heartworm. And I thought that was so weird because it's not just heartworm or heart. It's more appropriate heartworms or heartworm disease. But now we kind of have shortened it to just talk about heartworm. So weird. Right.
And it's totally accepted.
It's accepted,
not like you don't know what you're talking about because you're calling it heartworm.
Yeah.
It's totally accepted.
And I think that's kind of where I was going is the people who were talking about heartworm disease and calling it heartworm. I'm like, you don't even know what you're talking about.
Back in the day,
but
yeah.
Now we accept it.
That's how we all talk.
Last week we had Jennifer James on as a special guest. It's just going to be you and I this week.
Mm-hmm.
Because of a lot of reasons, but we are post-Thanksgiving.
We are post-Thanksgiving.
And so I know I'm fairly sure we talked about it last week because you got a little, or maybe it was the week before, about things we're thankful for.
Mm-hmm.
And you got a little emotional with your pets and things. But let's just go over that again, maybe since we recently experienced Thanksgiving. What are some things that you truly are thankful for that are a big part of your life?
Well, can we go back? Because you make it sound like I'm just this emotional bag of beans over here. I know, and I'm really not. But do you remember it was around Thanksgiving when Vera originally had started acting weird?
Yeah.
And we did her procedure, or her procedure between Thanksgiving and Christmas, and then she passed in January. So
and that procedure, we went in and removed a big window into through her pericardial sac, the sac around her heart, because she had a mass on her heart base that was producing a lot of blood.
But I don't think I was talking about thankful. I think that was the name game that we were playing. So, like, have you ever named your pet after anything weird because of Stormy Warren?
Yeah.
And I was talking about Tobin and how I very specifically wanted a V to be in the middle of his name to somewhat memorialize Vera, my dog that passed a couple years ago. But I don't know. I'm very thankful for a lot of things. I mean, we could sit here and talk for hours, I guess. But most importantly, my family, our current health, the pets that I have, the job that I have, the people that I work with. There's a lot to be thankful for, even though we have a lot of restrictions right now in our society.
Right.
There's so much every day that we're still allowed to do. and can do. And I'm thankful that every day I still wake up and I, you know, open my eyes. I mean, that's super thankful.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of different ways to look at the world, right? Glass half empty, glass half full. I'm very thankful for kind of what I have and where I am in my life as well, regarding my family, regarding my comfort level in society, whatever that means. I'm kind of being very general. Super happy business-wise to have four very successful practices and have the relationships with not only my clients but my employees, and it definitely...
Now who's getting emotional?
Does make me feel good, you know, to hopefully have a little bit of influence on some of the younger people who we employ to try to just kind of hopefully set them up for success in many different ways. So, I was talking to somebody recently and, you know, there's different levels of happiness. There's different levels of wealth. You know, if you think, you know, oh, poor me, no matter what's going on with you, there's always somebody who has more money and who has less money, who has more health problems, who has less health problems, you know, and also, I guess, the same. And so I do think the older I get, I am very much starting to understand and become more attuned to, don't just focus on one aspect of your life. It needs to be well-rounded, but you need to be happy and you need to try to make those people around you happy and enjoy every day that you're going through, because you're going to remember, you may remember some really, really bad times, but you're going to remember some of the really great, wonderful times, and you're not going to remember those so-so days to where, oh, I had to get up early and go into work and I stayed late and, you know, oh, poor me, I didn't get to eat lunch. Those are not what memories are made of. So, anyway, yeah.
Thank you for the reminiscence of Thanksgiving past.
One side or the other there. But last week we talked about the agusia and dysgeusia, which was loss of taste and change of taste. We talked about sialadenitis, which is inflammation of your salivary gland. Did we talk about thrombocytopenia?
I don't think so, but we have historically.
So thrombocytes are platelets, and then penia means low number of, and maybe we did. We've had a run of thrombocytopenic patients here of late. So
I think we talked about it a little bit with the whole new rickettsial strain.
Yeah, we did. We did. We kind of led into that.
Yeah, we did.
And so you wanted to kind of focus this week, go pretty heavy on the Healthy Pet Happy Life, which is kind of our wellness segment.
Yeah. So real quick, though, before we get into that, I have been making promises or false promises for a couple of weeks now that I would educate myself as to why industrial meat was bad for the environment. And so I have
not really industrial production, medicine, production beef, sheep, swine.
Yes. Eating meat, essentially. Yeah. Let's lay it down into total lay terms. Why eating meat is bad for the environment. And I will tell you that I will continue to learn more about it. But basically, from what I have read from places like PETA and greenspace.org, they are mostly concerned about the carbon footprint that the production animals, the industry of producing animals for meat, leaves behind, and essentially how it is affecting the Great Barrier Reef, the deforestation, and essentially is just
ozone layer.
Bad for the earth.
Okay. Do you think these people have like an agenda when they start coming out with this information?
Well, I do. I don't want to get super negative on it. I definitely do. I think, as we've learned many, many times, you can always create the narrative to justify your own thoughts and feelings. Always. In anything that you do, you can create a narrative to make it fit and suit your goal.
That's a very good point. Whether you're Republican, Democrat, Independent, you know, whatever your beliefs are, you're going to have an argument for that. Some of the animal welfare organizations that I used to think were kind of okay and initially thought, oh, good for them. Once you dig into kind of the deep roots of those organizations, some of them are super way out there. So I would just say be careful. It's kind of like the internet. Do not believe everything you read on the internet.
Yeah. So what I would say take away from this is that maybe we could help their cause by not choosing to eat meat every day, somewhat limiting your consumption and that kind of thing. Then I go into this whole negative aspect of like, well, if I don't eat the meat, is the meat going to go in the trash? And then we right. basically had this whole situation for no reason. I don't really know. I don't want to get that philosophical about it.
I'm kind of a firm believer. Believe in what you believe. Do what you want to do for the right reason. Make your own opinions and judgments.
Right.
Educate yourself. Do not let somebody tell you what to do for their reason. It needs to be for you. Kind of what I said earlier, right? Like, be happy in your life. If you don't want to eat meat, that's fine. If it's your life calling to try to convince all of the world population to not eat meat, that's fine too. That's not my life's calling. So do not try to convince me, you know, to go to work for you to do that. And so
with that being said, I guess I would be remiss in the sense that these organizations do also feel like not eating meat, these animals are mistreated or they're put in bad situations. And so to your point, their life's calling. There are a lot of people that don't eat meat because it is inhumane. There are a lot of people that don't eat meat because yeah. it is bad for the environment. There are a lot of people that don't eat meat because they think that they're going to be part of these other groups. Yeah. And maybe they're led down the wrong path.
And I would grant, if I can interrupt here, that a lot of these thoughts and feelings probably are true, but to a very low level. It's not all or nothing, mm-hmm. right? So my spouse does not really feel like animals are treated humanely in a feedlot situation or a production situation, but she didn't grow up in that environment like I did. And so I know what happened and didn't happen there, but I also know that sometimes things weren't quite as rosy as we would like to believe. And so,
certainly.
Again, I'm very much a, as you know, very gray. It's not all black. It's not all white. The world is very gray to me.
So I do think, and gosh, I said I wasn't going to get all philosophical about it, but if we could just turn back the clock and everyone raised their own cow and they ate, you know, their own cow for the entirety of the year, fed their family with that, we wouldn't need these meat producers. We wouldn't need the meats to be in groceries, you know, that kind of thing. But
it's not going to happen.
Butchering is just not something that people are learning. It's kind of a lost trade. It's not going
to
happen.
So to your point, right.
We're not going to go backwards in time. We're not all going to have our own mini farms.
You raise your own beef cattle to eat. Are you going to butcher it yourself? No.
Right.
I've been involved with some of that as a child. Upsetting to me, but it's kind of the ways of the world.
Right.
And so, again, are you all or nothing? Do you?
Yeah. People would argue it's the way of the world that you were introduced to, but yet there are other people that would choose
a lot of factors.
Truly only plant-based products. And I'm not saying it's right or wrong one way or the other. I'm going to be right in the middle. I am going to do, as you said, I'm going to do what I think is best for me, what makes me happiest.
Let's say you're a vegetarian and all you do is eat tofu. Which is soy, correct?
Well, vegetarian and vegan are very different.
Let's
vegetarians will still eat dairy products.
Let me just go down the whole tofu line, though. If you don't eat meat and tofu is one of your protein sources, mm-hmm. I'm sure if I dug hard enough, I could find something negative about soybeans.
Well, if you flip the script, right, and we don't slaughter cattle and we don't have these feedlots and these kinds of things, are we going to get, you know, wild cattle? Are we going to be overrun and overpopulated
sure.
with these large, menacing 2-ton animals?
Like, what are the regulations that are in place at these facilities and the butchering aspect of it? So
you can't flip from left to right and one to the other. It's not one. It's not a black and white situation.
Totally agree.
I do think that there needs to be those things. So to your point, if everyone eats tofu, suddenly, you know, we're harvesting too much soy.
Oh, the people that are harvesting the soybeans, they're underpaid. They're mistreated.
Sure.
So
again,
and all the chemicals we're pumping into the earth to make the soybeans, you know, grow.
Yes. Sounds like crickets
efficiency.
Are the way to go.
Yeah. So I'm going to order some of those.
Just
I showed you a package.
I
think when Dr. Reese sent me that email, I went on Amazon and tried to find them. And so now, like every week, I get this, hey, suggested for you.
That's
crickets,
so
mealworms, grasshoppers.
That's
so
right.
I'm going to order some. I think it was only like 15 or 16 bucks for a bag.
Maybe you should eat them and we can go back to that secret sound.
Oh, my God. gosh.
Could you imagine just the crunch of the chitin?
So anyway, I know we're kind of going off into left field here. We're kind of going into the production aspect of veterinary medicine, which is a huge segment. What's the word I'm looking for? Aspect of vet med.
Mm-hmm.
So huge, in fact, that Texas Tech is still on track to get their new veterinary facility up in, I believe it's in Canyon, Texas.
Yeah, we talked about that like a year ago or so.
They're on track, and they just put an article out maybe within the last 7 to 10 days that assuring people that they are going to be accredited. And Texas A&M, which is where I went, is a very well-rounded, very well-known veterinary school. This new campus, Texas Tech, I don't know what they call it, at Canyon, Texas Tech something, is going to be a complete veterinary school, but the main reason they put that in was for production medicine for large animal veterinarians.
More agricultural.
Yes. And so before we leave the whole meat versus ozone versus tree thing, one of the stats that you told me before we started the podcast today, and I'm like, oh, I totally disagree with that, was how much land surface, like this production.
Mm-hmm. It was an article I read. I wish I could find it because then we could quote them back. But
how much land, I guess cattle, swine, sheep, goats, maybe I'm forgetting something, how much land they occupy and take up
versus
and what
like
that
a grain.
What that carbon footprint is versus farming.
Mm-hmm.
And you told me something like...
It was like 87% of the agricultural land is devised only for
and meat
production.
And I'm like, oh my gosh, I completely disagree with that. Growing up, you know, in the South Plains of Texas, it's definitely less than 1%. It's like less than 0.1%.
You didn't go into farming, and so it might be a little bit
what
true,
do you mean,
right?
I didn't go into farming.
You didn't go into farming. You didn't go into farming as like your career choice.
Yeah,
I'm just saying, but they... I guess what they were mentioning is that they clear pastures. There's more cleared pastures for these livestock than there are for grains to be grown. They also mentioned that majority of the grains that we grow are actually grown for feed for the animals, and that if we didn't actually feed them all these grains that we grow, we could actually feed more people.
So I'm going to disagree with that. We grow a lot of cotton. We do grow a lot of sorghum grain, which is animal feed. We talked about corn. Well, we didn't talk. We talked about soybeans,
mm-hmm.
corn, wheat, which can be for bedding, can be for human consumption, millet, which is African primarily, but millet's grown over here, which is a human grain source. So I'm getting all worked up. I completely disagree with those stats because I've been there, done that. But maybe... I don't know. I was going to ask for emails. I probably don't want them because I'm pretty opinionated on this. But let's move into Healthy Pet, Happy Life.
Let's do it.
Okay.
All right. So we promised last week that we were going to talk about pet obesity because quite frankly, obesity in pets is an epidemic. Would you agree?
I would agree.
And we have seen more of it probably over the last 10 to 15 years. Would you agree with that statement? I mean, pets.
Yeah, because pets are more members of the family.
Yes.
They're in the house. They're not kept in the yard or in the doghouse. I don't know if I've ever known a dog that stayed in a doghouse, but yet that's what I grew up thinking about pets.
I do think that we still have some clients that their pets are outdoor pets only. It's a very, very small number, and it's surprising because, again, when we talk to them as technicians when they come into the hospital, it is not... One of the questions we ask canine companions or owners that have canines that come into the practice is not what percentage of the time does your dog spend outside, right? We never ask that. We ask that all the time for cats because it's very common in our area for cats to be indoor-outdoor or outdoor only. But for dogs, it's not really common at all. So we pretty much never ask that. So it's always surprising when a client says like, oh, he lives outside, or we're just outside. And we bring him into the garage when it's cold or something along those lines. But we are,
and a lot of doggy doors, I guess, honestly, for dogs and cats that are in and out. But
I was going to say, you know, Gwinnett County passed a couple of years ago, there's no tie out or tethering. There's laws against that. So fortunately, we're not seeing pets tied up outside and solely living out there in this county.
Super rare to find that for sure.
So, all right. Basically what I was going to read off is the Association for Pet Obesity, which apparently there is an association for pet obesity.
Well, sure there is.
They published information in 2018. So they actually are taking results right now for the 2020 results. So I'm assuming they do results every 2 years because there were no 2019 stats. But that in 2018, 55% of dogs and 59% of cats were obese. And so what I wanted to talk about was obesity in the animal hospital. When we talk about it, we're not looking at pounds, right? Like people, we look at pounds, we look at their height and weight, and then what their body mass index is, or their BMI. And so for human beings, the BMI over 30% is considered obese.
For pets,
we have a body condition score.
BCS. Yes?
So do you want to tell us, there's two different rules of thought here.
Two scales. So a 5-point scale or a 9-point scale.
And do you know where those derived from? Is there one that is more regulated than the other, or?
I don't. All I can tell you is I know Purina publishes a handout regarding the 9-point scale.
Okay.
And personally, I like the 9-point scale, and that's what we use in our practices because... So 3 out of 5 on the 5-point scale is normal.
Right.
And you only have 2 choices on the left and 2 on the right. And 5 out of 9 is normal on the, you know, the 9-point scale, 4 on the left, 4 on the right. I feel like I've talked about this before. Like, I will find myself giving a dog like a 5.5 out of 9. And I'm like, why are you doing that? Why is it not a 5 or a 6? You know, figure it out.
That's the whole point of a 9-point scale, right? So like you're able to give broader, a little bit more of a yeah. Vague, I guess.
So you get to feeling kind of guilty, you know, when a pet's a little overweight. Okay, well, they're just a 6, but they're just a little over. You know, I don't think I've ever diagnosed a 1 or a 9. But so, I have had a very few 2 and a few 8s. And so it's mostly, you know, I mean, it's mostly, honestly, 4. Very rare to have a 3. So it's mostly 4 or ideal body weight 5. And then 6s or 7s.
So if you have like a 3 or lower, typically we're going to see pets with like either they've been rescued, they've been obviously mistreated, something like that, or they have like a, they have like EPI or something like that, like a disease or a chronic disorder that maybe the owner isn't recognizing, or they don't realize that their pet's lost 10 pounds because they see it every day or something like that. And then when you see something 7, 8, typically, it's we're going to mark it on our report card.
Yeah.
But
yeah, we have
we're
going
to have to have
tough
conversations,
yeah.
Right? And so the conversations are very difficult because we have to talk to the human being about this, right?
Yeah, because they're the ones responsible for the pet being overweight, if we're being honest.
But there's also usually, in a lot of people, an overweight issue with the human. And so then you have to somewhat... have a very awkward conversation in a room. But so when you have that conversation with owners, what are some of the ways that we offer pets to lose weight?
So one of the first things we consider is the pet hypothyroid? Are they overweight?
So some sort of metabolic disease.
For a metabolic, you know, disease that we can test for and we can supplement and get them back, back to the ideal weight. We talk about how much they are feeding the pet. And what that food is. We talk about, do they exercise their pet? And then we kind of, I kind of gauge where the pet owner is. Like, are they completely not interested in this discussion?
Right.
Or are they interested in the discussion? So one of the things that I often talk about is, you know, Mrs. Client, I'm only bringing this up because it's very important. And obesity is a disease, and it's not healthy for your pet to be this weight. And are you interested in, you know, helping? Are you interested in me trying to help you reduce your pet's weight to get them healthier?
Sure, because it has to be.
Because I can have a 2-hour conversation, and they walk out of the room and just say, "Oh, he thinks my pet's fat, and my pet's not fat." And so one of the other things that I, one of the other, I guess, conversations I will get into when we're talking about food and how much they're feeding, if we don't feel like the pet is hypothyroid or at risk to be hypothyroid, one of the very common things I will say is, well, regardless of what you're feeding your pet, you're feeding it too much for your pet because your pet's overweight.
Right.
So it doesn't matter if it's a cup or 10 cups or Olroy Science Diet, you know, Royal Canin. The bottom line is your pet is getting too many calories. And again, we kind of judge what that reaction, that response is. Mm-hmm. So nutrition is kind of one of those things I think we get beat up on as vets because we get defeated.
Of course.
But we do have to remember that food is love and people love for their pets to eat. And most clients are kind of like grandma. The more you eat, the more they love you and the more you love them. So I don't know if I answered your question, but.
So I think you did. Basically, we start with a conversation with the client, right? So let's talk exercise last, but more so diet, right? When it comes to diet, I feel like we are kind of up against the wall when it comes to talking with owners. Most oftentimes, they're not coming to us being the veterinary hospital or veterinary professionals when they're picking a diet for their dog.
They are going to the pet store and they're talking, we've talked about this before,
the 18-year-old kid, of course,
who's selling the fanciest, shiniest food, and he's going to explain to them why this is the best food for their pet.
But so to your point, when it comes to your pet is getting too many calories, oftentimes majority of these foods are going to be for all life stages.
Yep.
Right? So essentially a puppy food.
A puppy food, because that's what it what is meant by all life stages. It has to meet the
needs of the criteria of a puppy,
not the older dog. Yes. Yep. So be very careful about that.
Yes. And so when picking a diet, we should pick something for a life stage specific. So if you have a young dog, if you have a senior dog, if you have a geriatric dog, or if you have a puppy, you should be able to pick a food that way. And then kilocalories or calories per meal. Have you ever sat down with a client and actually calculated the kcals for a dog or a cat?
I don't. That formula is out there and we can figure it out. And that's a super serious client that maybe we've tried on metabolic diet. We've tried on some of these things. We've talked about the treats they're giving.
So we didn't really go there with prescription diets just yet.
Yeah. So, but normally that would be like the last thing I would do because I was going to say, who would care? A lot of people would care. But if I tell you, you can feed your pet 1,070 kilocalories, but which is really the same thing as calories in people.
But do you think that people would understand it better, right? No, because we eat calories. And if you're going to diet, you're going to eat a calorie-restricted diet as a human. Most people are going to eat a calorie-restricted diet.
Again, I'm just going to go back to...
Hold on. I want to get there. So I don't know who it is. The FDA says that for
an American,
you should have 2,000 calories. When you're on a diet, you should eat 12 to 15, right? People understand. They can compute that.
Yep.
They know that an egg is 70 calories. They know some of these things.
So
if you tell them one piece of this dog's kibble is one calorie and your dog can have 30 calories a meal, don't you think that that makes them understand?
It can, for sure. So the average milk bone is 40 to 60 kilocalories, which we call calories.
Right.
I don't even know why we call them calories, but they're really kilocalories.
They're kcals, yeah.
But that's probably a whole nother show.
Yes.
And so we can talk about that. Like, you know, here are the calories that your pet can get. Here's how many calories are in the food. And therefore, you cannot give your pet these treats. If you give a milk bone, if you give them 3 milk bones, you know, your pet that needs 400 calories, you just gave them, you know, up to 180 calories.
Right.
And so we start talking about lean treats, which we like here.
Right.
I guess the bottom line is this whole obesity nutrition thing, that could be your full-time job here.
It could be. But so again, this is going to get very broad and vague, but we have talked about diets on the podcast, I guess probably when we first started, because when we first started, there was a giant food recall. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
There was a giant food recall because of all these grain-free diets that are being linked to heart disease in dogs.
Yep. DCM.
Everybody and their brother can create a dog food. And I think that's what the general public doesn't realize. They don't realize that I can create a dog food in my basement, put a shiny label on it, and then sell it to PetSmart.
Call it, you can make it nutritious enough for a puppy and sell it for all life stages. And you can call it grain free. You can call it well, taste of the wild.
There are some limitations when you start, you know, finding some of these verbiage, like, you know, a meat product or with, like, it's very tricky. Reading a dog food label is probably even trickier it than reading a hard. Nutrition label for a human being.
Yeah.
But don't you feel like because there are the pet food market is so flooded that this is lending to some of the obesity that we see in the practice?
Oh, for sure. I mean, the whole pet industry, right? Whether it's veterinary clinics or food or clothing or brushes or shampoos, it's a very lucrative industry. And so there are a lot of players in the market for sure. So one thing I often will tell clients that their pet is maybe a body condition 6 out of 9.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say it's 2, 3, 4 years old, not too overweight, but I'll recommend a light food. And I always will point out, if it doesn't say light, it's not a calorie-reduced food. If
That's
it says fit and trim or
weight management
or less this or that, it doesn't matter. And so I usually will direct them to a Hill's Adult Light or a Purina Pro Plan.
Right.
So
remember, we talked about AFCO feeding trials, and those two foods that you talked about, they do AFCO feeding trials on all their pets, which again, is not very big. I think it's like 6 months, 6 dogs, and then they feed the pets, and then they basically study their behaviors on them.
It's only 6 dogs?
I'm pretty sure it's very small.
I thought it was more than that, because I know like Hills in Kansas, I think 60 is maybe a more appropriate number.
But it's a very small number when you're talking about feeding millions of animals, when you're doing a feeding statement. But a lot of the foods like your grocery store brands, things that you're going to be able to pick up in a Walmart, a Meijer, a Costco, Sam's Club, these places, they're probably not going to have feeding statements on the bag.
So a couple of other misconceptions that I often hear are... Number one, that, oh, it's wintertime and I've not, you know, my pet I know is a BCS 7 out of 9, but we just haven't been exercising, so I'm just going to start exercising more.
Mm-hmm.
That's the same thing as people, right? Exercise helps us, but you can completely control your weight. I don't have to exercise a day in my life, and if I eat appropriately, I can control my weight.
But it's the same thing with people. You cannot out-exercise or over-exercise a bad diet.
Yeah.
It is the same thing with pets.
Yeah.
They very much go hand in hand.
I guess the other thing I was going to say is high protein. Most of us were brought up to believe that our pets need high protein. The higher the protein content, the better it is.
Right.
Completely not true.
It's
appropriate protein, yes.
So if your dog, it's very similar to people, right? If your dog is active, let's say that you have a lure chasing dog or an agility dog.
These dogs
are going to need that energy from the protein. If you have a dog that lays on your couch 18 hours a day,
doesn't really need 27%
protein. It does not
protein.
Need a high protein diet.
Yeah.
So again, very big misconceptions. And real quick, we talked about all these commercial brands or these commercial diets, but nothing about prescription. So if a pet owner comes in, you're going to talk to them about the body condition score or BCS. You're going to talk to them about the amount of food they're feeding.
What they've been doing.
And then specifically, if they're not able to get their pet's weight down by restricting some of the calories, then we're going to talk about putting them on a prescription diet that's truly meant to reduce the weight of pets.
We have some maintenance diets, the adult light diets we were talking about.
Right.
And then we do kind of quickly move into the prescription diets, the WD from Hill's, weight management, the RD, reducing diet. Now they have metabolic diets to kind of change the way you metabolize your food and energy, so that if the owner is continuing to overfeed their pet, which is usually what happens, that the pet is still not going to continue in that weight. I was going to say, we'll still lose weight, but that's not true. We'll not continue to gain weight, because that's kind of what my own dog is doing, is not gaining more weight. She's obese, though. And so there are other brands as well. But, you know, that really does get very deep into that conversation. As I said, you know, is the pet overweight? How overweight are they? What has the owner been doing? What is their interest in getting their pet to lose weight? If they're completely not interested, we will pick up on that. We're still going to recommend it, but we're not going to have that 30-minute conversation. But I do think it's very much like people. It's very, very difficult to kind of identify what needs to be done and do it and then be accountable. One of the things on your list here, I think, was, I feel like I saw, weigh your pet and measure body condition.
Yeah.
So whenever I really get strict and serious about losing weight, I will weigh myself every day because I want to see what's happening. If you never weigh your pet or you never weigh yourself, how do you know if you're losing weight?
Or gaining at that point.
You don't. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you don't. So it's a very complex, very difficult disease that we deal with. And I guess what I would kind of offer up is anybody listening, if you have a specific question about, you know, you and your pet's lifestyle and what's going on, email myself or Dr. Miller at My GA Vet or Angel at MyGAVet.com, and we will try to kind of individually make some recommendations.
Notice that you cannot practice veterinary medicine out of state. So again, it will be based
recommendation.
Based opinions based on what you give us. So don't want to be breaking any telehealth rules here.
Yeah. So the last thing, and then I'm going to let you sign us out unless you have something more. We talked about Stormy Warren.
We
and
did
his name last and week. How he's mm-hmm. on the highway. I think it's 56. I may have said 57, but I think that's the channel on XM Radio. And we couldn't think of his co-host.
The guy who went to Michigan, yeah.
Yeah, the Michigan who kind of has the same role. And then earlier in the week, you told me, oh, it's Buzz Brainerd.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, gosh, I can't.
How would you have ever remembered that, though?
Yeah.
Real quick, going back to the pet thing, though, as far as pet obesity, I just want people to understand that it is truly a severe,
a
serious situation, because just like in humans, when your pet is obese, it can lead to
what?
Other issues.
Such as?
So let's talk the most obvious, joint disease. When you're carrying around extra weight,
so
just
maybe
like a human.
Not the most obvious, but the most clinically relevant disease that we see. No, I think heart disease, kidney disease is what most people would say. Heart disease, because that's in people.
I mean, I guess, but I don't think people realize. I wouldn't think that the most lay people think that pets get heart and kidney
the
disease.
The most common thing we see with obesity, in my opinion, here is ruptured anterior or cranial cruciate ligaments as a direct result of the weight and time.
Okay, yeah.
Okay. Hip dysplasia is not caused by obesity. It's worsened. And
right.
One of the first things we're going to do is try to get your pet back to an ideal weight if they are very dysplastic in their hips. Heart disease, I've never diagnosed that in pets, but I use that in my discussion points.
You've never diagnosed heart disease in an animal?
Due to obesity.
Okay. As a secondary cause.
Yeah.
But to be fair, do you list like obesity as a diagnosis in every single pet that comes in if their body condition is greater than a 5?
No, but we do document BCS in every pet.
So I'm just saying, like, so if a dog has a BCS of 6, technically he's a little overweight.
I guess what I'm saying, humans, we know they develop heart disease as a result of obesity, is my understanding.
Gotcha.
And I think that's probably coronary artery disease. We typically diagnose mitral insufficiency, tricuspid insufficiency, or dilated cardiomyopathy.
I understand.
Which, my understanding, is definitely not related to obesity, but we do use that in our conversation with clients. So, big topic.
Yeah,
so
we could
thought
talk
we only
forever.
Had like 10 minutes worth, and here we are 37 minutes into the conversation.
Yeah.
So
that is part of the Healthy Pet Happy Life segment. Healthy Pet Happy Life, as we discussed earlier in this year, is going to become a bigger part of what we do in the practices. I guess our internal motto, if you will, aside from the whole like care and show it.
Yeah, so we're moving towards that as far as wellness care, for sure. Yeah.
We are currently producing it on some of the items that we have in the practice.
Is that slogan on our new water bottles that we're giving out?
If our staff listens to this, then
hopefully
they,
none of our staff listens.
They know.
Hopefully they do.
Dr. Reese, shh.
Yeah, don't tell anybody.
No, but yes, they are. And it was printed on our most recent t-shirts that we did. So it is something that we're trying to incorporate. I've yet to ask or have any staff member say like, hey, what's this? What does this mean? But it is something that we're trying to incorporate as a group.
Yeah, cool.
Check us out next week, guys, as we discuss more in the news and in our industry. Follow us on Instagram at People, Pets, and Vets. And follow all of our clinics on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. And check out our blogs on our website at mygavet.com. I'm getting the 1 second.
I have one other thing to add.
Okay.
When we were talking about body condition score, quick story.
Oh, gosh.
One of our best clients, Ms. Khan, Pete the cat, we took out his lung lobe 2 weeks ago.
We talked about him.
Mm-hmm. I was going over one of her dog's report cards, and I'm like, okay, and the body condition score is 5 out of 9, and she, like, put her hand up and said, okay, can I stop you, Dr. Miller? I'm like, yeah. And she's like, what do I need to do to get my dog to a 9 out of 9?
Oh, no.
And I just looked at her and kind of giggled, and I said, well, Ms. Khan, I failed to explain. This is the body condition score. 5 out of 9 is right in the middle. It's perfect. She wanted so much for her pet to be perfect and thought, since it did not get a 9 out of 9, which I can...
Since it didn't get the highest grade.
Yeah, I can completely understand. Get it. Like, yeah. You know, on a scale of 1 to 10. And so after that, I definitely made a point before I ever talked about the BCS on a pet's report card. Like, okay, your pet's body condition on a scale of 1 to 9, with 5 being the best,
okay,
is a...
So to your point, good thing for our listeners, right? Because I don't think we mentioned that.
Yeah.
So 9 is not ideal.
Yeah, 9 is not ideal. It was just cute, though. And she's awesome, as always. But
it makes sense. I mean, honestly, right? Like, you want the highest grade always.
Yeah, yeah. She just was striving for perfection.
Except for here, you want middle, right? More, think of it more like a sliding scale than like a tier.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Make sure you check out our blogs on our website at mygavet.com. And please hit subscribe wherever you're getting this podcast from. And remember, without people, pets are simply animals.
Bye, guys.